Hi, everybody. I'm Michael Goodman with ArtMatcher, the mobile app which will bring innovation to the art industry and is coming to you soon. While we work hard to build and release this app, we'll be talking art with some of the industry's most interesting and knowledgeable people. Whether you're an art aficionado or this is all new to you, we'll be here to provide valuable insight and hilarious good stories. Hope you enjoy our chat today. Welcome to another episode of ArtMatcher, the podcast. I'm joined in the studio today with Alexander Harris. Alexander, please, the floor is yours. Tell the audience a little bit about yourself.
So I live in and from Northern California. I was born in Berkeley and moved up to Geyserville, Healdsburg, which is part of the wine country, Northern California, about four. Been here pretty much ever since. Went away to school to study art, music, and philosophy. Chico State for a few years. It was about a semester short of my majors, and moved from there to Florence, Italy to study, I guess it would be considered realism, at a school called Florence Academy of Art. And spent a couple of years there doing the painting drawing program. Went to Russia for a tad and went to the Repin Academy, then came back to Florence and did the sculpture department at the Florence Academy. And the whole time I was doing that, I was sending work back over to my dad, who had started a gallery of just his and my work. And then I left Florence and moved back home here, left all the galleries I was showing with throughout all over the place. I started showing when I was about 15. And then
forgive me to interject. Was your father in the art business prior to you kind of studying your artistic endeavor?
My father is an artist. My grandfather was an artist. My father started his life as an artist, had his first show with MC Escher in a dual show in San Francisco. And it was him and Escher, at Civic Auditorium. I think they had a couple hundred thousand people come through. Got pretty well known in that world. Immediately decided that he hated the art world and the gallery world. Moved down to Central. He'd be a great interview, by the way. Moved down to Central America for, I think, 6-8 months. And ended up shifting his whole major, which was printmaking, and his whole artistic career into...
Wait, this was your grandfather?
This was my father. My grandfather was an artist and had a dual life as...
So wait, your father had a show with MC Escher?
Yes. Yeah.
Wow.
His first show he ever had. So he was at California College of Arts and Crafts at the time.
Now
it's CCA.
CAA?
Yeah, CCA.
Funny enough, I went to school at San Francisco Art Institute. So with the Bay Area.
Oh, yeah.
That other school was an option. I really wanted to go there, but it ended up not working out. I wanted to go there for, like, they had, like, glass blowing. They had an interesting...
My dad helped put that studio together. And one of the reasons I went to Chico was because the glass blowing studio at Chico was also helped put together by the guy who started the glass blowing at CCA, I believe. And then... he moved to Chico, and then he was one of Chihuly's guys.
Wow.
Under Chihuly. And so he opened this giant glass blowing thing, and Chico State was Chico or CCAC for me. And Chico was a lot less money, and the art program was actually larger. They just had a bigger facility. This was before they'd expanded into San Francisco. And so
what's your opinion on art school? You have going through the process, because what I learned about art school was that, you know, I learned out that they have a high turnover, meaning the kids you start off with are probably not going to graduate with you. And I was one of them. I left.
Yeah.
And it's fascinating to me because one of my best friends at the time, when we started at SFAI, San Francisco Art Institute, I asked you, how many people did you end up graduating with, seeing it throughout the 4 years? And he was like, three people.
Yeah, that's right. Sure.
And yeah. So I want to get your opinion on, because my thoughts on it is, if you're going to be a studio practicing artist, you got to be spending a majority of your time creating.
Yeah.
So tell me the pros and cons in your opinion of kind of like art school, and would you recommend it for young artists today?
It's a complicated question, and
it's a loaded one.
It's a loaded question. I dropped out of school four times or whatever, three times. I didn't drop out. I just didn't leave with the degree. And I knew from the beginning, so I started showing when I was 15 years old. I knew from really young age, like that was what I was dedicated to. My father and I got into multiple conversations about like, if you want to make a living, you don't want to be an artist. And I'm pretty stubborn. I said, I'm going to figure it out. But I knew from the beginning of my life, you know, I started mapping it out and saying in my brain, this is how this person did it. You look at history. And I knew that if I wanted to be successful at what I wanted to pursue, I needed to have that time and practice and knowledge that doesn't necessarily come from going to art school. It comes from the practice of art and the education of art. Some schools are really good at providing you the education, and some schools aren't. And each school offers its own thing. I think to be a successful artist, the other part of it is you kind of need to understand and navigate the business side of it, which I have never seen a school be helpful in that. I've never participated in school. I mean, you put your portfolio together. That's, I think, where it usually ends. And then you go into your MFA or put your portfolio back together.
Well, it's so interesting. I find that a lot of artists that go through the MFA route, they often go get an MFA degree in hopes as a safety if they don't make it as an artist so they can teach.
Teach. Yeah. I think a lot of people.
I find that when I was in school, I looked up to my professors. When I saw my professors, they were like the rock stars. I wanted to be like them. And then as I got older, I was like, no, I don't want to be like them. They didn't make the cut, or at least the majority of them didn't. I was very fortunate enough to go to Santa Monica Community College, funny enough, and have like some rock star professors who were just like teaching for fun. Yeah. Like they were literally like teaching because they're like, no, the only reason why I'm teaching is so I get a free studio at the university.
Well, there's some great – Santa Monica's always had a fantastic art community. It's just been wonderful.
And they had glass blowing. That's where I took my first glass blowing class.
All that behind you is glass. I was admiring that greatly.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The pins, this work behind me is made out of vintage pins. Vintage pins. Yeah, they're pretty wild here.
Since we're remotely doing this, it's like –
it's pretty wild.
Look at that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, this the guy who does it, he considered himself more of a craftsman. So he's this kind of undiscovered artist. His name's John. And in fact, I never even met the guy. My client purchased that piece. And I've been holding on to it ever since. Now it's been like at least 2 years, but
no kidding.
Now it's mine. I think after a certain amount of time, if you've been holding something on to something, part of the property or something, but it's interesting. So you're now also, you're not only a practicing artist, but you have a gallery as well. So how have you juggled that, being a creative and then running a business? And as we were talking about, they didn't necessarily teach those skills to you in school.
No. And I was lucky enough, I think, to grow up where my dad decided that he wanted to leave the art world and not be an artist and showing in a gallery. And he went into textile design using his artistic abilities, drawing stuff out, printmaking, and going down to these villages, and he started a business out of being a printmaker in as large a format as you can get, which is ended up being textile in the clothing. And so he knew how to run a business. He ran a big business for a while, for a long period of time. And then he retired right around the same time, or it shifted his career into going back to full-time painting. And he wasn't going to go show with any galleries. My mom said, get all these paintings out of here, go open your own space.
Wow.
And wow. So he did that. And I was showing with the gallery. I can't remember where, I think in town there was a gallery in our local town. And then there was maybe one in San Francisco or Sacramento or something. Anyways, I started showing with him, and we kind of teamed up, but I was going to school at the time. So I was going to Chico. That was kind of the fallback into that.
It kind of,
go ahead.
No. So it's interesting because I have a similar start. I went to Los Angeles County High School for the Arts. That's where I was studying. It's like the Juilliard of the West Coast with multiple disciplines. And I was in the visual department, and I started like my gallery when I was like 15.
That's great.
And I started the gallery because at the time in high school, my professors told me, like, you're not allowed to sell paintings. Like, you shouldn't be selling your work. And they said, why not? And they said, well, you know, you're not going to be proud of this. But I'm like, but it exists. I created it. And even though I'm not proud of it, like, I'm proud of it now. If someone's proud enough to buy it, then... And so I guess everyone would say that I have that right left brain, but to me, it just made sense. I didn't want to be like my professors. I would see their studio and they would have thousands of paintings, thousands, like over the years. And I would say, I don't want to be that. I don't want to have thousands of paintings. Like, this is not the way life was meant to be for me to make all this art to store it. So at a very early age, much like yourself, one of the big shows I had was when I was 17. I called it, it was called 17 Unrestricted. And untitled Unrestricted. And I rented a space. I brought all these works together. And I remember like just certain people coming through the show. And some of my professors are like, can you believe he's selling this for that much? And I'm like, as I studied the art world, I started to learn that there's stuff that was way worse that was selling for much more.
Yeah.
I didn't even understand. But it was interesting. A lot of artists I find, they need permission to show their work. Like you need, you know, some type of certificate. And I always found that so odd because some of like the most successful artists in the industry today, I would say they're better businessmen than they are actually artists, probably. Meaning,
yeah,
I would. Running, you make art, yes, to yourself, but I think like I don't know where this comes from, where artists aren't allowed to make a living.
It's horrible. I think at the root of being an artist, though, where you just want to create all day, there is a certain dysfunction that's a reality to that, also. I mean, I would be lying if I didn't say I was completely dysfunctional. I am a highly functioning dysfunctional person.
it's interesting because when we're looking at like, I had the last guest I had on, which was Alex Kupchak. He's a buddy of mine who went to the same school. And he was talking about how he just wants to create art. He doesn't want to deal with the business end of it. But the landscape today for artists, and I think it's anyone in the creative industry, is you have to wear multiple hats.
Yeah.
You know, because a gallery wants a superstar. They want someone who is engaged with the public, has Instagram, is on TikTok and doing all of this stuff. And in one ways, like these new distributions have helped, but they've also, I think, done a disservice because so many artists, they still just want to create. They don't want to be the promoter in that sense. I know for myself, I got so caught up in the business world that now I have a problem just getting into the creative world, meaning like finding the time to go into the studio, create work. It's almost like you can't do both at the highest level you can. You got to like abandon one at some point or have someone else do it. So
that is tough.
You're in a similar situation though, where you kind of, right? I mean, you have your.
Yeah, I am. The functionality for me ends up being the gallery space. It's all mine and my dad's work. So really it just ends up a place for me to store my stuff and then interact with the public. And I get to sell from there too.
And then, so you don't have other artists.
It's no just other artists. Yeah. That's kind of our main rule is like, I could show other artists, but you end up managing other people and other things. And I sell enough work where it's just, I rather pay my overhead and do my own thing and run my own show. And then I can split that time with my dad. So we're open, I mean, not in COVID times, but we're open 5 days a week. And then he's there half the time. I'm there half the time. And then I have an employee. So she shows up now. And I had a kid 2 years ago. The last couple of years, I pulled back a lot. And I've been able to remove myself from being there every day at the gallery. And being more, I live 5 minutes from it, so I get a phone call, come down and meet this client, and I just show up. I've cultivated enough relationships where I'm sure you know how that works, is that someone can just call or text or just wants to say hi, and you can continue your business relationship with that.
Do you find that you, though, are the selling point in the transaction, meaning the people you employ to work for the gallery that displays your work, does it really help what I'm trying to get at is the concept of someone else, like third party representation, meaning, you know, it's your gallery and they're calling you to go down there. And like, are you then closing the deal like with the client, or they're like, is the deal kind of closed? And you're just like,
most of the time it's like, come and close the deal for sure. But it provides me enough space and freedom because, you know, there's a lot of dead time in gallery, gallery sitting. So I can be creating in that time, or be spending time with my family and then creating. So it's provided me the mental space to be able to do enough of those things. And then to have my dad as the partner in that and the backup also adds to the story of the entire thing that we're doing. And it's provided me that I would say luxury to not have to show up at the gallery and be heavily involved every day. Now, this last year, I pulled back almost a lot. I haven't really even opened my door. We've been by appointment only. So I go back to that position, but we're in such a casual mode anyways. And it's become so privatized by appointment that it hasn't affected that at all.
Do people confuse your dad and yours work in terms of you both share the last name, like is Harris Harris?
No, honestly, if you look at our work, we're worlds apart. It's very, I have a more classical touch on I do a lot of landscapes and cloudscapes. And then on my abstract side, it's like, I'm much more, minimal.
I got to see one of your abstracts then, because
there's like a little figure. There's another
one. Okay, here's the studio. I'm getting the studio tour, my friends, virtually. I see that part where you say more classical in terms of the figurative work.
Yeah. So
what do you prefer doing? Figurative or abstract?
I love everything, and I try to keep a place for it. And in the way that I try to think about things, I try to be honest to myself of approaching everything that I do through the same lens of viewing it. Where it's, if I'm doing a figure, it's an abstract thing and a concept that I'm forming in the space of on the canvas. So abstract or real. I mean, if I'm doing realism, I usually only look at an object or it's out of my brain. And my one rule in everything is I never look at a photo. I never reference things. I always just paint directly from my mind's eye or from an object itself. So that's that's my rule, my common point in all my work. And so,
you don't use any photo reference, but you'll use a live reference.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Now, it's interesting because do you look, when you're making art, do you focus on it piece by piece, or do you have like a series in mind that you're creating? Because like for me, at least personally, I look at things, I know I can't fit all my thoughts in one painting. So I know I look at things in a series, but I'd like to take your take on that.
I definitely series and big picture. I mean, I try to keep everything in, and I would say like a large version catalog of work starting from when I was first started showing or even before that, and the relevance of it as it's attached to my work today. And there's variations in all of that, and the way I articulate form and the way I describe ideas are offshoots of the bigger picture, which is, I think I can throw things back in formatted series and bigger picture conversations to be had. The other day was looking at one of the newer pieces I'm doing, and I have probably close to 300 pieces that I have in my studio at any given time. So I'll go up to my loft and I'll grab a piece and pull it down. I'm like, oh, that was like that piece there. And then I can pull my palette together on that and then the concept and have those four.
Would you go back and rework in a piece? Like if there was a piece you started, let's say 5 years ago, would you go back in and rework it?
Yeah, definitely. Wow. I mean, I have pieces that are going back over 10 years easily. Lots of pieces.
For me, you know, if there was a painting I started like a year ago, I just have a problem going back into that space. I use it almost like a time capsule because I think every artist experiences this. You go, you look back at your work like 5 years ago or the year before and you go, oh my God, this stuff sucks.
What's that? Yeah. What was that?
We're like the harshest critics on ourselves. That's if you're taking it seriously. If you're doing it as a hobby, I don't think you're critiquing yourself because you're just like, the hobby is such a great experience. But when you go into artistry as a work, like you have a mission, you have a challenge here, I feel like. And it's interesting. Do you actually get influenced? Like, do you have a community of artists you work with, at least, or like you draw inspiration, or they come in the studio, bash your work? How do you get your feedback?
I mean, my feedback is now, it's, well, right now it's my wife, my son. Who's 2 years old. And I don't, in all honesty, I don't get a lot of feedback. My dad will say stuff because I share space with him in showing. And he's the main person that I bounce ideas off. Where I live, I have a couple of friends that are actors. I have a couple of friends that are painters. But I'm in a little bubble, in all honesty. And I'm really hard on myself. And when I'm going to do something, it's because I want to do it that way. And I have people come into the gallery too, and you see the gallery for a day and you have 40 people come through and talk about each one of your pieces. You know, you hear things and I'm pretty numb to what other people are thinking.
No, it's interesting because I remember going through art school and having the professor just shred, you know, everyone's paintings and stuff. And now looking kind of back, I'm like, you know, I mean, if that's what they want to do, like, and they're going to continue to do it the way they want to do, who is anyone to stop them, you know? But it's interesting for some artists, it helps them develop new ideas. I think
I agree with that.
The real question for me is, are most artists really making work for themselves? Are they making it to share with the world in some shape or capacity? Because if you're a singer and you're making a song, as great as your song is, I'm sure you want people to enjoy your song. Like, you know, this sounds pleasant on the ears, or we know there's different genres and stuff like that, but I feel the same goes for art, meaning in whatever style, whatever you're doing, you want it to be accepted, hopefully at the highest level.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I think that you want one person to look at it and get something out of it too. And then when you look look into the world of you're producing work and you need it to, you need to leave your life and go somewhere. You want it to really be appreciated because you need to eat, you feed your family, do whatever you need with the value that you put on your work. It needs that value in monetary sense has to be also equally as appreciated in the way that someone interprets that. So even if I say I'm going to sell this to you for a dollar, if that dollar is equivalent to someone's interpretation in value and what they grab from it, it's the only dollar they have in the world. That means more than the money of the dollar, you know, but there has to be some.
Yeah. And I like that you brought up value. It's a really touchy subject for most, but we're going to talk about it. How do you value your work? How do you come to a figure?
So I kind of started, I've just gone over the years and developed the space that I'm in now. I know that there's a general market value for the area I'm in. I know that I sell a lot of work, so I'm not overpriced on anything. I feel comfortable where I'm at. I don't feel pressured. I think I feel I just fit. I have a general sense of the market and the overall reality of what that is.
Well, you brought up something very interesting because I asked this question to a lot of artists and you said, I know the kind of the value in the area of where I'm at. And that changes. I had one artist, he answered the question, I value my paintings based off my lifestyle. And then he proceeded to say, I don't really live a lavish life or whatever it is, which if someone wants to live a lavish life, then they're going to price it accordingly to the life they want to live, right?
Yeah, I would say that's, I mean, there's a reality to that. Yeah, sure. I mean, I'll be honest, I'm not living like a pauper and my paintings aren't $3 a piece. And I have to sell this many to accommodate the house I have and the studio I have and the gallery I have. And
so it goes back to the light. It does go back to correlate to the lifestyle, which I thought was interesting because when I think about that, you know, as you have like a studio, a gallery, a business has overhead and expenses. And I think it's so important to educate the public that they're not just buying a piece of canvas and paint. And the value is there. You know, you have all the years, the education and the years it took for you to get to the point where you're at now too, because it's interesting. You know, when I see the art world is divided by two polar opposites. It's actually rare to find someone in the middle. You have people selling for stupid amounts. Like you can't rationalize it. It's what we call like, excuse my French, fuck you money.
Yeah.
And then you have people who are just selling it for like, they're practically giving it away. Like they can't give it away. So everything in the middle, when someone asks me, at least because I deal with such a large range, when someone goes, oh my gosh, that painting's 20,000. And they look at me like it was the biggest number. I said, I'm jaded by like, whoa, I've seen, yeah. I'm selling things that are like a million too. So I don't know. I still love that $1,000 painting, but it's so interesting to me. You know, a lot of people who go, the market that I find gets really questioned is that those in-between prices where I find most mid-career artists are at. Like, what makes this painting? And do you mind me asking, like, what's the high and the low of your painting? What's the range for your painting?
My smallest one, which is like something like this, that's like $600. Next size up is like $1,000. I go up to $30,000 would be for a really big piece.
Okay, so there's a nice range there. So that's really nice. Like someone can get like a small original painting and still enter your market.
Right. Yeah. And I have enough selection in my works where I can allow that to a lot of people. I mean, and I have people that have been collecting my work for a long time and they've started with a smaller piece like that. And then now they're further along in their career and they can afford a bigger piece for $15,000, $20,000, $15,000.
How do you find that you're in pricing them, is your older work more than your more recent work? In terms of how do you evaluate it? In terms, because obviously enough people buy into a certain price and you have a responsibility ethically, you know, where, you know, trying to keep it fair, you know, collecting is important.
So I've increased my prices, I wouldn't say substantially, but marginally over the last decade or 15 years. And I've increased it, I don't know, 15-20%, not a lot, but I have bigger pieces. I have more substantial pieces. My pieces that are in certain categories, I value differently also, like a realist piece of mine. I hardly ever produce anything that's realistic anymore that I sit down and I really focus on. And I don't even know if I have anything in here right now. But I'll price that at whatever I feel like. And if someone wants to buy it, great. If someone doesn't, it's their first show. And it's, it's part of my bigger picture of the works that I'm showing. My abstracts, which I produce a lot of, and my landscapes, which I produce a lot of, are right in the same ballpark of pricing. And if something sits around in my studio, let's say for a year, and it was $10,000 last year, and this year I've decided that category of work has gone up $1,000, then I'm going to pull that one up with it. I'm not going to charge less. It goes right along with everything else.
So you have like a relationship with works that you hold the value, meaning, you know what, this is a really good work. If someone doesn't see the value that I see, then they're just not going to get it.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I mean, and I'll keep it within a reasonable range of, you know, I mean, there's pieces that I honestly know I should sell. I finished it and I don't want to sell it. I would rather just look at it myself. But there's a hole in the gallery. I need to go fill it. And it's the piece I have that's ready. So I bring it down there. Someone goes to buy it. I may price it a little bit higher because that's what that size and range work goes for right now with me. And I go, shit, you know, like that's what happens.
Yeah.
I should have priced it for more, but really like it's doing it myself a disservice to do that. I'm more grateful that the person bought it and that it's going to a home that appreciates it. And like, couldn't ask for anything better. There's like the nice best thing in the world.
I think it's one of the biggest compliments. I know for myself, anyone who's purchased anything of my own work, and it's funny, I've sold everyone's work. And when it comes to my own work, I don't want to deal with that part of it. But you know, my value in that sense, like just from my business background. But it's interesting because if I go into someone's house and I see a work I created, it like that gives me butterflies. Just like that is so cool.
It's cool.
Like I can just. It's just like, and for me, I know that it's just. I have my collectors. They are who they are, and it's interesting because I find that a lot of visual artists, it's so much harder to get into the top one, into that top percent of artists than any other industry. And the reason why I say that is because to the regular average person, they don't even know the top percent artists. Like I had someone about 2 years ago, they asked me if Picasso was alive. And it was like, seriously. And I didn't want to discredit, you know, everyone has their own experience and things, but they just didn't like, they were so not interested in visual art that they were just like, yeah, I know they knew of the name, but they didn't realize like he had died like years ago. And how is it when like you tell people you're like, what do you go by? Actually, I should ask, like, do you tell people you're a visual artist? Do you tell them you're a gallery owner?
I mean, it depends on the situation. If I'm with, sometimes I don't say anything. Like I just, what do you do? I mean, I'll say painter sometimes. My wife always will say I'm an artist or I'm a painter. I'm a painter, sculptor. I have this other hat. I mean, I'm a gallerist too. I do architectural design. I just took that up in the last 2 years because I was bored. I don't know why I was bored, but I was like, yeah, this sounds like a good thing. Someone asked me to design their winery. I was like, yeah. I did a lot of work on my house. And I've done a lot of remodel projects. So sometimes I tell people I'm a contractor, like as a joke.
You know, it's funny because if I tell someone I'm a gallerist, they go, wow, that's he's a gallerist. And then if you tell them, and if you're, here's the thing when you pull the artist card, if you say you're an artist, they go, it's like a death in the family. Like, oh, another artist, Jesus. Yeah. And it's crazy because unless you're a superstar artist, it's like, oh yeah, are you actually consciously choosing to be a creative? And it's just so funny to me because most of the time I tell people I'm a gallerist, and it's funny because I get this, like, most people don't even meet gallerists. They're like, who owns a gallery? Like, they think it's this prestigious thing. They don't know that when we're doing a trade show, we're picking up paintings, patching up walls. It's not as glorified as people think it is, actually. you know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. No, it's you say you're an artist. It's a weird hat to wear, in all honesty. And it's just, how do you make a living? Like, how do you eat? Do you have a family? Like this
is isn't that amazing? You know, we're talking and we're meeting for the first time, and isn't that amazing that you've had that, like, you know what I'm talking about in terms of that experience in the creative world, at least in the visual. I guess I should say that in music. I have a lot of friends. When I had a friend, I was talking to her, and she's like, yeah, I'm not dating any musicians. No musicians. I need someone with a job. I thought that was hilarious, but, you know, there's so many creatives out there, and having an outlet and finding a way to distribute it is almost just as important as creating it. Even more so, more than creating it. Meaning there's so many people creating in their own bubbles and vacuums, and we're not even getting to see these potential amazing creations.
Yeah. And then I think, because they can't, there's nowhere to put it. And so they go into this. I have a lot of friends who are just really wonderfully talented artists and have zero business acumen. They don't know how to value their work. So if they sell something, it's undervalued. So it doesn't even make sense for them to sell it. I have one of my really good friends. He wanted to start a Patreon page, which I think is great. He goes, my goal is to have 300 people who give me, I think it was $5 a year. And I thought, okay, but did you do the math on that? Like, and you're going to do a portrait for $5? Like, what? Because the idea was to do a little small portrait.
And maybe $5 a month.
I think maybe it was $5 a month. Even then, I thought
$60 a year.
You're one of the better portrait artists that I know. And I know some, like, really well-known, great portrait artists. And like the portrait that you should sell up for like $1,500 for like that size thing.
Well, it's interesting. I had a conversation with one of the artists that I had on here, and I was asking him how many works does he make a year? And his answer was like, and when I said works, I meant like masterworks, like works that you're like, you know, let's say you're creating one a month. Like, you're like, wow.
Really good. Solid. Yeah.
And I said, okay, so you create 12 works, right? Let's say you sell them at $5,000 each. That's $60,000 minus half. You're probably going to give to a gallery.
Yeah.
You're left with $30,000. You're literally like, you cannot live in LA for that. After your bills are paid, there's nothing. Like, I mean, and it's not, I mean,
right.
So when I tell a client, you know, this painting is $10,000, and they're like, well, how long did it take him? I said, you know, even if, let's say it took him a month. I love, one of my artists said this, Coleman Aaron, before he passed away. He was, I think, 90 at the time when he told me this, but we were in the studio. I was with a client, and his works were going for like $30,000, $50,000. And there was a small drawing. And he said, the client's like, how much for this? And he's just like, 10,000. And the guy's like, 10,000? It's like a small little piece of paper. He's like, how long did it take you to do? And he's like, oh, 90 years. That took me 90 years.
That's the answer.
And he's like, it took me 90 years to learn to do it in 5 minutes so effortlessly. And I heard someone told me Picasso said that, but it was my first time I heard it from my artist. I just laughed because it was so true. Like, you know, how he valued all that wealth and knowledge, all that experience to do it. But then going back, it's like, you know, you got to sell quite a bit of paintings to make a living as an artist. And you must get this, having your gallery, do you find that, I mean, do you have artists submit to your gallery?
Yeah, all the time. And I always try to find them a home or a place. And I say, send me your portfolio. It's like, I'm not taking you. You're not going, my home is not your home. But I'm happy to try to find them.
I should say that about my gallery. My home is not your home. I like that.
You can't live with me, but I think it's and as a gallerist, as someone who has represents other galleries, I think it's like you have the job you do and you have as a representative of the artist community is, I mean, my hat's off, and it's like the I just think it's amazing and wonderful, and I love that you can have like this, it's this, you're supporting families and like the extent of people that are creating. It's just, it's wonderful.
But it was a very humbling feeling for me because I had to like knock my own ego. Cause unlike most gallerists, I'm actually pretty technical. So my work, when artists would tell me, oh, you don't know how, no, I know how to paint and I'm pretty good at it actually too. So you're not going to tell me it. I don't know how to do this. I know how to do that. So it's interesting when I go to studios, because I have a lot of friend artists, they just invite me for my opinion. It's not as a gallerist, but then on the back end, they're like, yo, do you think you could sell this? Could this sell? And I'm like, it's terrible for me to say because I study markets, but there are things that are less desirable if you are interested in them. And that's just what it is. Like, you know, if you're going to do, you know, as crazy as this sounds, if you're going to do these crazy erotic paintings, you cut your market, actually. Yeah. As much as you're like, oh yeah, people love like naked women. Like there's a lot of people say, not putting that on my wall. I'd love to see it, but not, it's not going into my home.
Yeah. No, I talked about that with my wife the other day. I said, you know, I want to put a nude in her house. And she goes, where? And I'm like, I guess it's not going in our living room. I was thinking, we just put this fireplace and I'll put it over the thing. And then I thought about it. I was like, yeah, that's probably, yeah, no, probably not. So maybe,
but I, for me personally, like I have such an eclectic taste, and I feel like a kid in a candy shop when I go to a studio, especially if I'm digging this stuff.
Yeah.
And I feel like when I have the space, right now I'm living in an apartment, but when I upgrade my space to something much larger, I definitely, like, I'm going to go crazy. I'm going to be the person with a giant art wall. And because I feel like that, and it goes back to our interest. And I'm hoping with Art Matcher that we're able to, well, not hoping, we will. We're going to influence culture to, art is cool. It's a cool thing to do. It's a cool thing to collect. It's a cool thing to be engaged in. I think one of the things that intimidates a lot of people is, after the transaction is done, they ask themselves, what happens if I need to sell this?
Yeah.
And my answer to that is, you need to buy it in the intention of never selling it.
Yeah.
At any cost. Like, you don't want to sell it. Why would you? It's there to be appreciated and loved. You know, and sure, if someone wants to love it more than you, then they can pay more too, right?
Yeah. Well, it's funny, and you go back to that when you find homes for art, the relationship that you have, you know, like say when you go to your client's home, the relationship they have to your art and to you is, it's way more intimate than you could ever imagine because of the space they've lived in with it. And then that ties back to how they think about you. It's just a really weird wonderful dynamic relationship that I think it's incredible. And there's nothing like it that exists. I mean, you have this thing that you've lived through. I've had people that have had pieces now for, I guess, 20 years, let's say, and it's gone through all these spaces in their life, and all these phases and all these times, and they've had the worst day of their life and they see this thing, and they've had the best day of their life and they see this thing. And every time they look at it, they're like, oh, Alex painted that. And then it's like, oh.
Yeah, they have a piece of you in their house.
Yeah.
I can't believe time flies by this quick. We're pretty much at the end of our rope here. Alex, where can the audience find your work, where they can see it? Can you put in the whatever social you would like to promote?
Sure. I guess theharrisgallery.com is mine and my dad's website. I don't know if it's updated or not. And then you can go Instagram is the Harris Gallery. And then my personal one is get ready for it. You get a piece of paper and pencil out. A3L3XZAND3R. And that's the @ for Instagram. Or that A3L3XZAND3R.com. Good luck remembering that.
Love it. Well, they'll find you on social.
And those are the... Those are my plugs.
We're probably going to have a second segment. These podcasts are roughly about 45 minutes. We want to make sure the audience can bear with the attention span of today's society.
Sure.
So I'm looking forward to continuing our talk and our conversation. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. Join us next week. We're looking forward. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me. This was wonderful. I love talking with you.
Thank you so much for tuning into the Art Matcher podcast. We had an interesting discussion, a great time, and we hope you did too. Please tune in for next week's episode and like, share, and follow. For more information about the app, you can check out our website at artmatcher.com or look us up on social. Stay safe and be artful.